Yeah, man. Nick DiGilio here. Hi. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio, and Colin and Eric are going to join me here. We're going to review all the new movies, all the on-demand stuff, plus we are going to unveil our top 15 worst and best movies so far for the year 2014. We're a couple of weeks late on that. Here's Eric. Eric is here.
Hello, everyone.
How are you doing, man?
Good.
Colin is running late. He was videotaping a wedding, so he'll be here as soon as he can. And once we get in here, we'll get going. So we're going to review all the new movies, and let's see. I don't know which ones you've seen.
I'll tell you which one I've seen when we get to them.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's start with the on-demand stuff.
Yeah.
And the first movie being a movie called Beneath.
Yes. Not the Larry Fessenden movie that came out on DVD last year, but this one stars Jeff Fahey. A crew of coal miners becomes trapped 600 feet below ground after a disastrous collapse. As the air grows more toxic and time runs out, they slowly descend into madness and begin to turn on one another. And then my favorite part, inspired by true events.
Nice.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, you haven't seen this.
I haven't seen it. I hear it's horrible.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's Jeff Fahey.
I love Jeff Fahey.
Yeah.
He's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's Beneath.
Yes.
Now, would that turn in? Would that fall under the category of horror?
I would think so.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I don't think there's anything down there with them to scare them or anything. It's just them. You know, it's a lifeboat type situation.
All right. And now we've got. This next movie is called Cannibal.
Yes. Carlos is the most prestigious tailor in Granada, but he's also a murderer in the shadows. He feels no remorse, no guilt, until Nina appears in his life and love awakens.
I don't. It's a Spanish film?
It's a Spanish film. It's played some festivals.
And it is actually at the... It's playing at Facets.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see it at Facets, or you can on-demand it.
Yeah.
Cannibal. Okay. Very strange poster, too.
Yeah. So. Makes you wonder what part he's going to eat.
All right, now the next one I believe you've seen.
I have seen this one.
I have not seen it yet. It's Swanberg's latest movie. How many movies does this guy make a year,
Swanberg? He makes 17 movies a year.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
17 movies a year. He's made two while we've been talking. we like Joe Swanberg. He's a local boy, Chicagoan.
His last movie was terrific.
Drinking Buddies.
Drinking Buddies, terrific movie.
We love Drinking Buddies. Yep.
And the lovely Anna Kendrick is again the star.
Again, this one. He's working with some top-notch talent right now. And this new one is called Happy Christmas. Premiered at Sundance this year.
Did you see it at Sundance?
I did see it at Sundance. And Anna Kendrick plays Jenny, who moves in with her... I forget how... looking at the plot of this thing. The plot seems weird on the description here that I wrote down. But anyway, Anna Kendrick plays this young woman, kind of a drunkard, you know, kind of irresponsible. And she moves in with her brother, played by Joe Swanberg, and his wife, played by Melanie Lynskey. And just, you know, how she starts to turn their lives, you know, upside down. She's just very irresponsible.
I've seen the trailer for it. It looks funny.
Yeah. And Lena Dunham is also in the film. We love Lena Dunham. And, I think the biggest problem for me with this movie, it's not one of my favorite of Swanberg's films, that I had a hard time believing Anna Kendrick as this irresponsible person you don't want to be hanging with. Like, I think even in her most irresponsible, you'd want to hang with Anna Kendrick.
I would love to hang with Anna
exactly.
Kendrick.
Exactly. so I didn't quite buy that aspect of it, but I think Melanie Lynskey is very good in the film. Lena Dunham has a couple really funny scenes as the local pot dealer who befriends Anna Kendrick. And Joe Swanberg's young baby is in this movie, steals the movie.
Yeah?
Steals the movie.
Really? How old? How old?
Months. Seriously.
Are you serious?
Steals the movie. Months. Like, some of the best baby reactions I have ever seen on film. Seriously, people were talking about this kid at Sundance, how they loved her at Sundance.
And that's Jude Swanberg.
Jude Swanberg, yes.
Plays Jude
supporting
in the
actress. Yeah, I'm telling you, Jude Swanberg. Yeah. I'm putting her on the ballot. You watch when we get your ballot.
All right. So Anna Kendrick, you think, is miscast?
I think so, yeah. Although I still love her.
Okay. I mean, I'll see anything with her in it.
Certainly.
She's just amazing. All right, so that's Happy Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
What is My Man is a Loser?
I think the title says it all. This one, it looks very Hitch-ish. I guess. Married friends employ a single playboy to help them get their mojo back to save their marriages. The playboy, from the poster, looks to be the Stamos.
It's
the John Stamos.
It's Stamos, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, Stamos. Mm-hmm. And Michael Rapaport, Sean Young, is in this.
As a therapist, I believe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is, my man is a loser, but apparently there are two losers, so.
And you can also see it at the Streets of Woodfield.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it really?
It's playing at the Streets of Woodfield, yeah. So you can
see
see it there.
Is Snowpiercer still there?
If you want to see your if you want to see your Stamos on the big screen. Because, you know, Stamos is, you know, he's quite handsome.
I think the last time I saw Stamos on the big screen was at a festival, South by Southwest, like 8 years ago.
What was he in?
It was a one word title, I think. It was sort of like there was like three guys, and then, you know, they're all looking for love, and he was like the playboy guy.
Okay.
And he was the best thing about the movie.
Okay.
I don't know if the movie's ever been released anywhere.
All right.
Yeah, but all I can't remember.
Can't remember the name of it.
No.
It must have been very memorable.
Yeah,
you...
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, next is The Damned.
The Damned, and I've seen this one.
Okay.
And this is it's a horror film. It stars Peter Facinelli and Sophia Miles, who go into South America to pick up his daughter, who is, you know, kind of, you know, trying to be an activist, and they want to bring her home. Sophia Miles is a stepmother. And along the way, her and a friend of hers and her boyfriend, they're all in the car, and they get into a rainstorm, and they end up at this house, and something's wrong in the house. There's a little girl who is trapped in the basement, but apparently she's there for a reason. So it sounds like, you know, it's the setup is, you know, relatively decent, and it seems as leading into going to be, you know, it's somewhat of a spooky horror movie. But then it just becomes loaded upon the standard scares and really gets heavy in exposition in its final third. Like, so, like, 80-yard exposition. Like really? They just explain that while, you know, they have the head off screen? You just explain that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really not very good.
And does it fall into the scary little girl category?
For a little while.
Yeah.
There's sort of a possession angle to it, and then more people get possessed throughout the movie. So it's what starts off as the creepy girl thing, it gets away from that, and I think when it gets away from that angle, it just becomes standard, you know, possession horror.
Okay. It was originally called Gallows Hill.
Yes. Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
So that's The Damned. Mm-hmm. Not very good. Have you seen? I can't remember if you talked about this movie. I just saw the trailer for this movie called Honeymoon.
Oh yes,
you saw that, right?
Oh yes.
And the trailer's phenomenal.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's great. This plays South by Southwest. We were really hoping to get it for our film festival this year. We really went after it.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to be opening in Chicago. It's Magnolia, so it'll most likely be on, it'll be on demand.
Yeah.
But it's absolutely worth seeing.
Yeah.
It's really, really terrific.
I remember you talking about it, and it was it's pretty brutal.
Yeah. Well, in a way, it's Rose Leslie was on Game of Thrones, and Harry Treadaway, who's on Penny Dreadful right now, and the two of them play this couple on their honeymoon, really, you know, happy honeymoon. They go off to a cabin in the woods.
Yeah.
And something happens. And then it becomes this whole sort of like, I don't know if I know you type thing.
The trailer's great.
Is it?
I mean, oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, no. It looks really, really creepy and really, really
creepy,
cool.
Really well acted, you know, really sort of great psychological horror. Not a lot of jump scares, not that kind of horror. Just really just creepy and psychological and, you know, really works well.
Okay, it's very cool. It's called Honeymoon. I just saw it. I saw the trailer online day before yesterday.
Yeah.
All right, Very Good Girls. I've heard about this one.
Yeah, this premiered at Sundance in 2013, so that's how long it's taken to get out here. And it's a good cast. Dakota Fanning and Elizabeth Olsen play two best friends who are, you know, making that next stage in life. Both of them getting into boys and whatnot. And, of course, there's the one boy in their summer played by, I believe it was Boyd Holbrook, related to Hal Holbrook. I think
it was
his grandson, I believe. Okay. And he plays, you know, the boy who's going to sort of come between them in the way. And, again, it was a really good cast. Demi Moore and Richard Dreyfuss play the parents of the girls.
Peter
Sarsgaard is in the movie. He becomes sort of the creepy boss to Elizabeth Olsen, so she gets Sarsgaard-ed, if you know what I mean. this was a real disappointment because it was written and directed by Naomi Foner, who wrote Running on Empty, it's so bare.
Running on Empty from You mean
1980? I think that's what she wrote.
Wow.
1987. Look that up. I believe she wrote Running on Empty.
Okay.
Hasn't done a lot of great stuff since.
That was a long time ago.
1987?
Man. Yeah, I think so.
88? Something like that? Yeah.
All right, I'm looking it up right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, Running on Empty, she wrote 1988.
She wrote it. Yeah. Well, she wrote and directed this one, and it's just it's a lot. It's just full of cliches. It's just you know, everything you want to see about or don't want to see about the two girls and the guy that comes between them, and you know, the girl that really wants him and the girl that doesn't really want him, and of course you know who he chooses, and then you know, then everyone's happy at the end. It's just it's so kind of phony.
She's written some good stuff, man.
What else has she written?
A Dangerous Woman with Deborah Winger.
I never saw that.
Oh, that's a great movie.
Yeah.
And Deborah Winger's great in it.
Yeah.
Losing Isaiah.
Yeah.
B-Season.
Mm-mm.
I like B-Season.
Oh, I don't like B-Season.
And is she married to Jake Gyllenhaal or something?
I don't think so.
No, he's married. No,
not Jake Gyllenhaal.
Well, her last...
The older... Is there an older Gyllenhaal?
I don't know, but she's got... Her credit... reads as she's got a Gyllenhaal hyphen. So I don't know. Stephen Gyllenhaal.
Oh, is that that the father?
Yeah, it's their father.
Well, that would explain the Sarsgaard connection.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Well, not very good, though. Very good girls.
No, not at all.
All right. All right. Well, there you go. There's your on-demand stuff. We're going to come back and start reviewing some of the other things, and then we'll wait for Colin's arrival. Hopefully he'll be here soon, and we can start talking about the best and worst of 2014 so far. Let's take a quick break here on 720 WGN. Forgot to play that before we started reviewing the movies there. But there it is. It's official. It's movie review time. Eric Childress is live in studio. Colin is on his way. He just exited at Ohio.
Yes.
So he should be here in about 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll get to a little bit later on. We're going to review our lists for the best and worst movies so far of the year. All right. What do you want to start with, Eric?
Oh, Dealer's Choice. What do you got?
I don't want to make sure that we review something that Colin has... I don't know what Colin has seen.
Right. He hasn't seen Lucy.
Oh, he hasn't?
As far as I know, he's not seen Lucy.
Well, then let's start with Lucy.
Okay.
All right. Tell everybody about Lucy.
Okay. Well, this is the latest film from Nick's favorite filmmaker, Luc Besson. And it stars Scarlett Johansson as kind of a harebrained girl in Hong Kong, I guess she is, or Hong Kong, Tokyo, somewhere. It's not lost in translation. But she's there, and a friend of hers gets her to deliver this package to some Hong Kong gangsters. And they basically take her up on her offer, or not really on her offer. They force her to become an unwitting drug mule, and they plaster this experimental drug inside her body. And as she goes to deliver it, she's kicked in the stomach, and the drug gets loose, and this unleashes all the motor senses of her body and of her brain, and she basically becomes an ex-woman. Basically, her brain capacity begins increasing from 10% all the way up to 100%, and as it increases, she's able to read minds, touch people, and find out what kind of diseases they have.
Hear things from 5 miles away.
Hear things and, you know, levitate people and all kinds of crazy stuff, and you know, also shoot guns with pinpoint precision.
Right.
So you have, you know...
Morgan Freeman plays the Morgan Freeman role.
He plays the same role he played in Transcendence, and I believe both Dolphin Tale movies, because he starts talking about dolphins in this movie, so I think it's the same character he plays from Dolphin Tale. So Morgan Freeman plays a professor who starts giving long monologues about what's going on in her body. And she's going to seek him out to help her understand what's going on, even though she thinks she only has 24 hours to live. So it's a potentially, you know, intriguing idea for an action film in the hands of a director who might know how to do it. But we're dealing with Luc Besson here, and I've only liked one of his movies, and I think that's one more than Nick has liked.
I'm trying to think if I've ever liked any of his movies.
I like The Professional. I stand behind. I know I stand behind The Professional, but
What's the one where the guy goes? Jean Reno goes diving.
Big Blue.
That one I thought was okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that was before The Professional and La Femme Nikita. Actually, it was 88.
Yeah. He did that movie with Christopher Lambert where they've got like fluorescent
subway.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Yeah. So. But yeah, so we're dealing with Luc Besson here, who, you know, he's known for doing action movies, but he's also known for having really weird, wacky, comedic stylings. And it's on full display here in Lucy, right from the get-go, where he's intercutting Lucy being trapped by the gangsters with cheetahs hunting down their gazelles and stuff. Really odd editing, and... For a while, I was with the movie for a little bit, purely because I think Scarlett Johansson is actually given a performance that sort of makes it worthy of us following her on this journey. But then the movie spins wildly out of control. It's a surprisingly talky picture for what is being advertised, and talky in the worst way, because it's talky in a way that, you know, with the X-Men movies, we know what their powers are, and that's it. And they just set it up. You know, and they don't try to explain everything. Here they try to explain everything.
Yeah.
They try to explain everything that's going on with Scarlett Johansson's brain and her body and all this stuff. And science doesn't work the way this movie thinks science works. You don't just know things.
Yeah.
You can learn, absorb things faster, but you don't just immediately learn things, you know, just because your brain power is increasing. I understand that. And I know nothing about science. And clearly Luc Besson doesn't either. So the closer this movie gets to the end, the closer it basically becomes Luc Besson's Akira, which are the three, you know, most horrifying words in the English language. It's, you know, I don't think I hate it as much as you do, Nick, but it is pretty bad.
Yeah. All right, I'll give you my review after the news. Okay. And we're expecting Colin to be here in a few minutes, too. All right, movie reviews, and we're going to do our best and worst so far here on WGN. The news is next. Movie review time, and we've got the guys live in studio. Colin is here. Hi, Colin.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you.
And Eric and Colin live in studio because in addition to reviewing all the new movies, we are going to unveil our picks. We're halfway through the year, so we're going to unveil our picks for the best and worst movies of the year so far. So, you all right there, Colin? You settled?
I'm good. I'm calm now.
All right.
Breaking every speed limit in the book.
Chicago. Forget about it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to quickly review Lucy.
Yes.
You all know how I feel about Luc Besson.
Mm-hmm.
I can't stand him. I hate his. I thought he was retiring, and
he keeps going.
Yeah, and he made two movies this year. Didn't he do The Family?
That was last year. Yeah.
What the hell, man?
Yeah. No, he did that Kevin Costner one. He didn't direct it, but he produced that Kevin Costner one, right?
Three Days to Kill?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'll give him credit. He wrote Taken. Thank mm-hmm. God he didn't direct it.
Right.
All right. This is as stupid a movie as you can possibly imagine. Scarlett Johansson is watchable in it because she's Scarlett mm-hmm. Johansson. But the action sequences are ridiculous. It's really, you know, like Luc Besson, it's overly directed, and it is just stupid. This is a really stupid movie. And I don't even know what to say about Morgan Freeman's role in this movie, and I don't know what's going on with Morgan Freeman, but he just plays the Morgan Freeman character now. He's done like five movies in a row where he's just the Morgan Freeman mm-hmm. guy, and I don't quite understand that. I thought the casting was weird. And it just keeps getting dumber. You know,
yes.
She keeps getting smarter. The movie keeps getting dumber. And I mean, things like you said, like the, you know, I don't expect a ton of logic.
No.
You know, but come on.
Stop explaining it.
Yeah.
Just say that the drug works on her, gives her superhuman powers, and just let us believe that.
It's so stupid.
You know, give her new powers with every time you flash how much percentage brain she's using on the screen. Just do that. Don't tell me of her role in the universe. Don't send her back to 2001, you know, and caveman time so she can confront, you know, the first caveman.
Ridiculous. You know. Such a stupid movie. So, no, I do not recommend Lucy. And I knew going in that I wasn't going to like it. I just don't like the Luc Besson. Terrible. I did want to mention... what the hell? I was just going to say... It's actually makes me think Limitless was good.
Ooh.
That's how bad Lucy is.
Lucy's better than Limitless.
No, it's not. No, they both suck.
Yes.
But
like, ScarJo is more watchable... You know, my apologies to Bradley Cooper because I've liked everything he's done since Limitless.
Since Limitless, yeah.
But, yeah, no.
No, Limitless was just also...
Limitless is also incredibly stupid.
Oh, yeah.
And just as poorly directed. Yeah. Neil Burger.
All right. Ugh. Okay, well, now let's find out what everybody has seen. So, Colin, what have you seen this week?
Hercules and Magic in the Moonlight and Mood Indigo. You guys already talked about Happy Christmas.
Yeah.
What
did you think of Happy Christmas?
You know, sometimes I really like, you know, the Swanberg and the Mumblecore thing, and sometimes I feel like they're just movies that where the director wants us to hang out with his friends for an hour and 15 minutes, and that's kind of what this felt like. You know, I mean, I like the cast a lot, but I just felt like, you know, it felt like there was a lot of things brought up, but nothing really explored.
Mm.
And it feels like they're, you know, at 75 minutes or whatever it was, there's a lot of room there to just kind of explore more of these issues that he introduces but doesn't really do much with because all the characters are so agreeable and, you know, amicable about everything. And it feels like, you know, I just kind of kept waiting for somebody for some kind of conflict of some kind where I could just, you know, really latch on to the characters.
And it seems to be a disappointment coming after Drinking Buddies. Because Drinking Buddies,
I thought that was terrific. Yeah.
I still love the final scene in Drinking Buddies.
It's great.
Just so perfect. So, all right, well, Happy Christmas. All right, Eric, why don't you tell us about And So It Goes?
Okay. This is the latest film from Rob Reiner, a director that we all used to like at some point. it started.
Just remember, he directed Spinal Tap.
I know. Yes. I know he did, amongst many others. Michael Keaton. Hell. Michael Douglas, he plays this older, you know, real estate, very successful real estate agent. Who finds out that very very crotchety real estate agent who finds out is trying to sell his house and he finds out that his son is actually going to jail, and a strange son. He shows up at his door and it basically tells him, like, I'm going to jail. I need someone to take care of my daughter, your granddaughter. She's 9 years old. She's going to be all alone. We don't know where her mother is. Blah blah. So. Shows up with the granddaughter, and he lives in this this condo, a place that he also owns. And living next door to him is Diane Keaton, and she plays a widowed lounge singer who tends to cry during her performances because she's so sad. So the two of them living next to each other.
And then that gives an opportunity for Rob Reiner to show up.
Rob Reiner is the pianist.
Yeah.
With their horrible toupee. That's one of the big jokes of the movie is his toupee. That's the level we're operating on here, people. So the granddaughter shows up. He doesn't know what to do with the granddaughter. He paws her off on Diane Keaton. You know, they get around very well. And then Douglas and Keaton slowly begin to, you know, find each other. The movie was written by Mark Andrus, who co-wrote As Good As It Gets, and now we know where As Good As It Gets comes from, because And So It Goes, you're watching it, and all you can do for a lot of it is really think of As Good As It Gets, even if you didn't know he was associated with it, because Michael Douglas is playing a very thinly veiled version of Jack Nicholson's character. You know, he's older, he doesn't want to be bothered, he's a slightly racist.
He says whatever he wants to say.
Right, you know? Exactly. Yeah. And he's very successful at what he does, and then all of course these things are going to come along and change him. There are scenes in this movie that kind of have to be seen to be believed. You cannot understand where Rob Reiner's coming from. The guy that like you said, he did Spinal Tap. He did Princess Bride.
Stand By Me.
Stand By Me. When Harry Met Sally, you know.
Misery.
American President, you know. Few Good Men. I mean, there's a lot of great movies on this guy's resume. And
yeah, you know, you just mentioned American President. Man, that's a good movie.
That's a hell of a good movie. That's the last good movie he did.
Man, and how good is Annette Bening in that? Well, they're both.
Wonderful.
They're both. But Annette Bening is like transcendent in that movie.
Glowing so in good. That movie. Yeah. Yeah. Love American President.
Me too.
Now we got to go back to So It Goes. This is one of the worst movies that Rob Reiner has done. And I don't think I've seen.
And he directed The Bucket List. Keep that in mind.
The Bucket List is the worst film he's done. I think this is the second worst. Although I have not seen Flipped or.
Flipped is pretty bad.
Flipped is pretty bad, I hear. And I saw Magic of Belle Isle. That's bad.
Not as bad as Flipped.
Okay. But yeah, that's my point is that this is one of the worst. Two worst films that he's ever directed.
Yeah, it's crap. It's terrible. And you are so right about just thinking about As Good As It Gets while you're watching it. Because that's all I thought about when I was watching it. I was like, okay, this is not as good as it gets. Which is one of my favorite movies. And, you know, it's like Michael Douglas going through the motions.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the hell Diane Keaton is doing.
She's been playing that role for 15 years now.
Yeah, and it's just, it's really bad. Really, really, really bad. And the characters are kind of unlikable, and it's like a pale carbon copy of As Good As It Gets, only not even remotely close.
Only with a live birth.
Yeah.
If the movie has not sunk as low as it possibly can, you're going to have Michael Douglas deliver a baby on his couch.
Isn't that unbelievable?
That scene is, that's where it put me over the top.
Yeah.
Man. Or under the bottom.
Yeah. Well, anyway, and So It Goes, Diane Keaton and Michael Douglas, directed by Rob Reiner, who did a lot of press for this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was everywhere for this thing. Like, he really, really pushed it. What else has this guy written besides he didn't contribute much to As Good As
It Gets? I think it was rewritten. Yeah. Late for Dinner was the other notable title. Do you remember Late for Dinner? The two guys are in the...
Yeah.
I like that movie.
I haven't seen that in years.
I thought Richter wrote that. I thought W.D. Richter wrote that.
Maybe he has a...
Or maybe he just directed it.
I think he just directed it.
Okay.
Yeah, but or maybe he co-wrote it, but Andrews is credited as a writer on that.
Okay.
What else? It doesn't get good from there.
Georgia Rule.
Uh-huh.
The Divine Secrets of the Ya-Ya Sisterhood.
Uh-huh.
Life is a House.
Yeah.
That one's not too bad.
That's not bad.
Life is a House is pretty bad.
And then, Late for Dinner, which had Peter Berg in it, Marcia Gay Harden, and he did write that. Okay. W.D. Richter is credited as director.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, there you go. It sucks.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll review more movies. And then we will also unveil our lists for the best and worst movies so far in 2014. All right? All right. Yeah, man. All right, Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studios with Colin and Eric in studio. We are going to unveil our best movies of the year so far list. That's why you guys are here live. And Colin, why don't you tell us about Magic in the Moonlight?
All right. Well, this is Woody Allen's latest film, his 44th film.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm. How about that? And it stars Colin Firth as a sort of egotistical illusionist, and he's introduced to a woman who supposedly has psychic powers, very strong psychic powers, played by Emma Stone. And he's sort of brought in to sort of try and debunk everything that she claims that she can do. Until she starts telling him things about himself that he hasn't told anybody that knows her, but she just certainly knows all this stuff. And he's kind of renders him speechless a little bit. He has a harder and harder time being skeptical of her abilities. So this is Woody Allen pretty much by the numbers. This is going to be one of those movies that we, when we run down our list of Woody Allen movies, you know, over the years that we liked or don't liked, this is going to be one of those we kind of forget about that it exists. This is
like Scoop
or Melinda and Melinda or, you know, Celebrity, you know, those movies are going, oh yeah, that, I
what
forgot
was it,
about
Cassandra's
that
Dream.
Cassandra's Dream. Yeah, it's not the worst Woody Allen movie. It's far from the worst Woody Allen movie because Colin Firth and Emma Stone are very, you know, likable and watchable, you know, and they have some charm to them. But, you know, Woody is trying to sell a love story in the process of all this other stuff while, you know, the usual stuff about, you know, spirituality and God and, existentialism and all that stuff that he likes to, you know, delve into. And he's not really doing it in any, you know, new or innovative way here like he has done in the past. So it's, you know, it's just a very slight movie. And I didn't buy the love story, especially in the end. There's one point in the movie where if he had cut it off at the end, maybe a 3-star movie. But then he really tries to force the romantic thing, and I just couldn't buy it. So, you know, this is a kind of a forgettable Woody Allen movie.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is it just me, or does Colin Firth seem much too old for Emma Stone?
You mean in a Woody Allen movie?
Well, not in a Woody Allen
man.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. I just thought it was odd casting, that's all.
Okay. It is a little odd. But.
Yeah, I'm pretty much right in agreement with Colin on this. I mean, the word slight has been used a few times. That's absolutely what it is. It's Woody Allen doing, you know, a little lark of a movie. And it's a movie sort of two halves. You know, I think the movie starts off with some pretty solid laughs. I didn't even know what the movie was about when I went to see it, and knowing that it was going to be this idea of the debunking of whatnot, whether it's the magic and realism and God and, you know, magic and all that kind of stuff, I thought, you know, oh, interesting topic. I want to see Woody Allen explore this. Although you kind of know where the movie's going because you know where Woody stands
sure.
on this topic.
Yeah.
So there's not going to be a whole lot of surprises in this film. And when the film does sort of shift away from that and move into the love story, it's kind of like watching Woody Allen almost going like Cameron Crowe territory, and that doesn't work, especially like Colin said with the casting. You mentioned it too, that it's just not believable that these two would fall in love, especially considering that he's got Catherine McCormick back at home. That seems much more age appropriate, and he talks lovingly about her the entire movie. Why all of a sudden is he falling for this 20-year-old, you know, potential shyster? So yeah, it's you know, mixed review. It's not, you know, it's not bad, but it's really not good. It's like Colin said, it's gonna be the ones right in the middle that are neither here nor there for Woody Allen.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I haven't seen it. I'm not in a rush. I'm not in a rush. You guys know how I feel about Woody Allen. Although I gotta say,
you like Blue Jasmine.
I like Blue Jasmine a lot. Yeah. Actually, I thought that was a really good movie, and mostly to do with the performances. Like everybody in that movie was just great. So, it was funny because my buddy Mike View caught up with Blue Jasmine. And he's like he liked it because of the performances and everything, but he said that it was a total ripoff of Tennessee Williams. Like that character is Blanche DuBois.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, man, that's a really good point.
Mm-hmm.
So he was, because he's Captain Streetcar. You know?
Yes, he is.
He played the Brando role on stage, and he was great. So he's like, that's very close. You know, Tennessee Williams is like, you know, the Bible for him.
Right.
So he was like, Woody Allen ripped him off. And I'm like, well, no, it's an archetype. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but anyway.
Right.
All right. Now, so this is not as good as Blue Jasmine then, obviously.
No.
Okay. All right, cool. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we come back. Hercules. And then we will also unveil our top 15 worst and best movies so far for 2014. All right, it's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. That's right. All right, we got to wrap up the movie reviews because we want to get to our lists of the best and the worst movies so far at the halfway point of the year. Eric, really quickly, tell us about Most Wanted Man. This is Philip Seymour Hoffman's last movie.
Yeah, one of two films he had at Sundance this year, shortly before he passed away. This is the latest adaptation of a Jean-Luc Rouet novel, and Philip Seymour Hoffman plays, I believe, he's a British intelligence agent who is tasked with finding a suspected terrorist who may or may not be involved in a potential upcoming thing in an organization, and becomes a sort of this, you know, once they capture him, this sort of this tug of war between the Brits and the Americans about how they're going to use this guy and whether they're going to use him to snuff out other people in the organization or whether or not he's even involved to begin with. So, you know, typical Le Carré stuff, a lot of really sort of dry spy type talk and whatnot. And I've never been a big fan of Le Carré's stuff. I've never read his stuff, but in film form at least. The one thing that's about the film that's terrific is Hoffman's performance.
Yeah.
That really kind of goes without saying, but he is the star of the movie. He's front and center. A good cast. Robin Wright is good in the movie. Rachel McAdams, not so much. He's sort of almost worth recommending the film for. Anton Corbijn did the film. He directed Control and The American. I like The American very much. But this one, kind of, again, not
okay.
so much.
All right. All right, Colin, why don't you tell us about Hercules?
All right, Hercules is stars The Rock as Hercules, and he's now considered a legend. He has a strength put to the test when the King of Thrace has him needs his help in defeating a warlord played by John Hurt. It also stars Ian McShane, Rufus Sewell, and Ingrid Bolso Bernal as the. Yeah, I think that's how you pronounce her
name. That's pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
She's a female warrior who can fight, you know, with just a skirt and, you know, a top, while everybody else is taught to, you know, use their shields and dress head to toe in full armor. She can get away with a skirt, though. That's fine. She uses a bow and arrow, so, you know, she's fine. That's the kind of where the movie is operating on. This is pretty, you know, this is... big, stupid, bloated, but not altogether, not unwatchable. There are actually some really good action scenes in it, because I have to give Ratner credit for never once stooping to use the slow-mo thing in the middle of the action. That's what I was prepared for this one, because, you know, it looks like all these movies are trying to be the next 300. This is, you know, it's perfectly forgettable, but not, you know, but not awful either. You know, there's not much you can say about it. Rock is, you know, passable enough in it. You know, I've seen him do better, but he's okay. He's definitely Hercules. He definitely cast it well physically. But just, you know, kind of a middle of the road. Two and a half star review.
Okay.
There.
Yeah. All right, Eric.
Yeah, I wouldn't go looking for to do a book report about Hercules, but going to see this movie.
No.
But yeah, I mean, I think the one thing I wouldn't say about it is it's bloated because the movie's only about 98 minutes long. So it's, you know, it doesn't really, you know, wear out its welcome. But it takes a little while to get going, but then it gets to its first action scene. And Colin's right. The action scenes are actually very watchable, which is a great step up for Brett Ratner, who is usually pretty terrible, although there's some decent fights in the Rush Hour stuff, but we'll give credit to stunt coordinators and whatnot in those. I think the movie kind of takes on the personality of a star, and The Rock is a very likable screen persona, and he's winking and smiling his way through this movie. It's not even much of a performance. He bulked up, he did his due diligence, became Hercules, and that's what he gets. And so you get a couple of decent action sequences in a movie that, if it's on cable or a DVD rental, you could do a lot worse.
Yeah, this is. I enjoyed this more than I thought I would. I
mean, we all did. Apparently.
I mean, I thought it was kind of fun. You know, it's dumb.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you guys mentioned the action sequences, and there, I was surprised at how mm-hmm. how fun some of this stuff was. And you know, The Rock is The Rock, man. So, I still prefer the Lou Ferrigno Hercules.
Of course you do.
And Hercules
sure.
2. Have you guys seen those movies?
I know I've seen the Hercules. Yeah. Huh. Yeah. I don't know if I've ever seen
one of
Hercules
the greatest
two.
Bad two of the greatest bad movies ever made. I mean, I've seen both of those movies like 8,000 times and it's just hilarious. So, so this is it's fine. I mean, if you're a Rock fan and you just want to see a big dumb action movie, here it is.
Yeah.
So. Yep. All right. Well, let's start our lists, shall we? We'll do our best list first. Now, normally we do this at the beginning of July, but I was on vacation. And then we got cut short because of the Cubs a couple of times. Mm-hmm. So now we're doing it now. I've got 15 best and 15 worst. So what we'll do, we'll go around the room like we normally do. I'll start. And these are the best movies of 2014 so far, since we're at the halfway point. Number 15 on my list is Under the Skin, a good Scarlett Johansson movie where you get to see a lot of her. I thought it was weird and interesting and really, really cool, and I highly recommend it. Under the Skin is number 15 on my list.
15 on my list is Cold in July, Jim Mickle's latest film. People like Drive. This is very much a sort of a crime thriller from the 1980s, complete with a sort of a faux Tangerine Dream score. It's a really, really fun crime thriller, sometimes fun, sometimes ugly, but never less than involving. Definitely one to check out.
That's an interesting director, man.
Yes, he is.
Okay, Colin?
15 for me is our opening night film at the Chicago Critics Film Festival, They Came Together, which for me is the funniest film I've seen so far this year.
I forgot to include that one. I like that.
Yeah, this is just one of those I'm going to be revisiting a lot just to cheer me up, and it's... God, it's funny.
It is.
And if
really,
you hate romantic comedies, yeah, this is the movie for you.
It's really funny. It is a really good movie. David Wayne.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Okay, number 14 on my list is Jason Bateman's Bad Words, which is a movie that I just think is absolutely hilarious. And I know that some people have issues with the final third of the movie and what the resolution is, but it didn't bother me. And I think he did. I think he did a nice job directing it, and he's hysterical in it. And the relationship that he has with the kid is what Bad Santa failed at miserably, and this movie does so well.
Agreed.
So, Bad Words, number 14 on my best list.
Okay, number 14 on my list, I believe, is playing this weekend at the Gene Siskel Film Center, and also played our film festival. Michelle Gondry's Mood Indigo, which is just, I mean... if you thought, Amelie was, too over the top with its sweetness and whatnot, multiply it by 10 and you get Mood Indigo, really bizarre romance where just it seemed like everything in Michelle Gondry's head at any given instant is on the screen, just sort of, gilling it up,
yeah,
basically in every scene. And it's only 90 some minutes, and if you can stand with it for that long, it's really worth taking a look at.
I haven't seen that one yet.
Yeah.
I run hot and cold on his movies, though.
Me too.
Okay,
yeah,
count.
It's a terrific film. My number 14 is probably one that's going to come up again eventually. We've been talking about it the last few weeks. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. What is turning out to be an amazing franchise. I can't wait for the next one. These movies are just going above and beyond what a blockbuster should be. And, we should keep giving it money, people.
Yeah.
Keep going to see it.
Well, it's doing really well.
Yep, I'm glad.
All right. Number 13 on my list of the best movies is Jodorowsky's Dune, which I just think is a fascinating movie. I was not aware that Alejandro Jodorowsky was going to do had this dream project to do Dune, and it's a documentary about that and about the ideas that he had about the making of the movie, and they're insane.
Yeah.
This guy's a cult director, El Topo. A lot of people know that, Santa Sangre. So he's a weird dude, and I thought this was a really, really terrific documentary about. An artist and about movies. So, yeah. All right, that's 13.
13 in my list, another interesting crime thriller, Blue Ruin, a 90-minute revenge thriller that starts off as one guy trying to, enact revenge on the guy that killed his parents, and how that basically spirals out of control from there. It's the kind of movie you do not want to spoil any of its, sort of wonderful set pieces. It's sort of a movie divided into threes. And each third is just as compelling as the last. It's a lot of fun, Blue Ruin.
Okay. And Colin, number 13?
My number 13 is a documentary I caught up with a few weeks ago called Watermark. It's a documentary just about man and Earth's relationship to water. And it's not a cautionary tale about, how we're losing water or anything like that. It's not like that at all. It spans 10 countries. It's got 20 stories, real-life stories, all having to do with water, and it is some of the most beautiful photography I've ever seen in a film. I really wish I had seen it on a big screen. I couldn't take my eyes off it. It really took me by surprise. I thought it was going to get another environmental, thing, you know, with a message, and it's got a little of that, but it's not, that's not the purpose of it. So it's called Watermark. Definitely check it out.
Okay, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll start again. We've got 12 more best of movies to go down, and if you guys have comments or questions, what have been your favorite movies so far this year? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Yeah, man. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio here on Michigan Avenue. And Colin and Eric are live in studio with me, and we are going through our favorite movies of the year so far. We always do it at the halfway point. We were a couple of weeks late doing this, but we've got our 15 best movies of 2014 and our 15 worst movies of 2014. And so far, number 15 on my best list is Under the Skin. Number 14 is Bad Words. Number 13 is Jodorowsky's Dune. You guys, 15, 14, 13.
Mine, 15, Cold in July, 14, Mood Indigo, and 13, Blue Ruin.
And Colin?
15, They Came Together, 14, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and 13, Watermark.
Okay. All right. Number 12 on my best list is How to Train Your Dragon 2. I love these movies. I think they're great and very, very entertaining. Beautifully, beautifully animated with wonderful action sequences that are, you know, about a million times better than anything in Avatar in that regard. And they're just, I think they're really beautiful, you know, really beautiful, wonderful movies. I love the characters. I love the richness of it. And I just think they're great. And Craig Ferguson is in it.
There it is.
Okay, next.
Number 12 on my list, one of the great surprises of the summer, Edge of Tomorrow. Tom Cruise, Emily Blunt. Film that, you know, looked like it was just going to be sort of a sci-fi Groundhog Day, and is every bit that. They make no apologies for that. But it's done with so much fun, so well-paced. Cruise, Blunt, Bill Paxton. I think only the climax is a little bit by the numbers, but up until that point, just terrific summer entertainment. Exactly what you want.
A really, really surprising movie. Yeah. And nobody went to see it. Yeah.
Not enough people were discovering it, but, you know, not enough to make it a success.
Yeah, much better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Colin?
My number 12 is a movie we talked about last week called The Congress. A movie I would love to see a second time. Maybe it would be a little higher if I did, but it didn't happen. It's on demand now. Robin Wright has her likeness transformed into a permanent animated version of herself that can live on, indefinitely, long after she's dead. And it's a really interesting movie about where we're going with all this computer technology. It's a little scary.
Okay, that's The Congress. All right, number 11 on my list is Joe, the latest from David Gordon Green. By the way, I had a guest on my show, a musician named Noah Gabriel, who is in a band called Noah's Arcade, which
nice.
Is a reference to Wayne's World. His wife, they moved to Austin for a while, and his wife babysat and nannied David Gordon Green's kid. And so now he's buddies with him. So nice. He's like, and so he's evidently a really unbelievably cool dude.
David Gordon
Green. So anyway, Joe is his latest movie, mm-hmm. and it's a return to form for David Gordon Green after some, you know, relatively questionable movies that he made. And one of the best performances that Nicolas Cage has ever given. And this kid, this Ty Sheridan kid,
he's the deal.
Yeah, he's the real deal. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, so it's number 11 is Joe. Okay.
Number 11, the sequel, maybe a little bit bloated, but the action sequences are undeniable, and that's The Raid 2. And that's the long and short of it. I mean, the movie is expanded to 2.5 hours. It's incredibly bloated with a sort of Departed-like plot. But the action sequences that Garrett Edwards concocts are just unbelievable. The martial arts sequences are as good as they were in the first movie. He's just as adept at doing a car chase. And
that
just,
was the new discovery.
That was the new one.
Can do a kick-ass car chase.
Too. Yes, exactly. So even you have to sort of you have to wait about an extra 10 minutes to get to each action sequence. It's absolutely worth the wait. So okay. The Raid 2.
All right, number 11 for Colin.
My number 11 is a movie called Locke. The stars Tom Hardy and nobody else. And it's him in a car. That's it. Him in a car dealing with, work problems, relationship problems, marriage and family and all this stuff. And everything is just kind of, going against him. And the way that this guy just, can command the screen for this amount of time with doing so much with so little. We've seen a lot of these one-man shows lately. We've got 127 Hours. We got All Is Lost. You can almost say Gravity in a way.
Buried,
mm-hmm. Right. This one I think is my favorite of not of Gravity, but but of the other ones. No, Gravity's still the best, and doesn't really quite count to this category, but it kind of does. But this one I think is just an amazing movie. Just watching an actor just command the screen for this, by himself. It's mesmerizing.
Okay.
I have to catch up on that one.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either. All right, we got to take a quick break. Colin and Eric are here. We got the news coming up, and then we will have our top 10 best and our 15 worst, and we'll get to that coming up right here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here. We reviewed all the movies, and Colin and Eric are live in studio with me, and we are going down our list of the best movies so far since we're at the halfway point of 2014, and we're in our top 10 right now, so let's get to it. At number 10 on my list is The Lego Movie, one of the most entertaining movies of the year, just a lot of fun, really great, and so much better than I had thought it was going to be. I don't even know what I thought it was going to be, but it's enormously entertaining. So The Lego Movie, number 10.
My number 10 is Obvious Child, the breakthrough role for Jenny Slate this year. Played our festival. We loved it so much. She gets pregnant from a one-night stand and then has to decide whether or not she's going to keep the baby. And it sounds, like it might be, a bit more dramatic, but it's absolutely funny and really touching. And again, it's just a breakthrough role for Jenny Slate, who I think is going on to great things.
All right.
My number 10 is another animated film, How to Train Your Dragon 2, which you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
This, again, just like Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, this is turning into just a fantastic franchise, and I can't wait to see more from it. And I can't wait to see it on some big screen again. I definitely plan to before it leaves, and it looks like it's on its way out a little bit. But, you should still try and go and see it on the big screen if you can.
Number 9 on my list has been mentioned earlier. It's The Raid 2. Unbelievable fight scenes and action sequences in this movie. I wasn't bothered by the length or the dialogue or anything like that. I thought the movie was just, it was stunning. And like the first one, there are sequences where you're watching it and you're like, well, they just killed that guy. That guy's dead.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's number 9.
Number 9 on my list is Zach Braff's Wish I Was Here. I didn't get the memo that we're supposed to hate Zach Braff now. I didn't catch the virus, apparently, that's infected a lot of people that now apparently hate Garden State. But I think this is a very moving, very interesting film about the sort of the fantasies that we invent or try to invent to keep our real lives from being a disaster.
Okay.
My number 9 is a little film from Japan that came out earlier this year called Like Father, Like Son. And no, this has nothing to do with the Kurt Cameron, Dudley Moore movie, whatever universe that movie took place in. No, it's about two families who, they each have a boy and they were born on the same day and they realize that their kids were switched at birth. And then they have to meet each other and figure out where to go from there. And I just got sucked right into this movie. I thought it was just really low-key, really beautiful, just a wonderful film.
Okay. Number 8 on my list is The Grand Budapest Hotel, the latest from Wes Anderson. I know a lot of people are soured on Wes Anderson, but I love him. And I just – it was – I thought it was great, incredible cast, and really beautifully done. So, but you got to be a Wes Anderson fan in order to like that one for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Number eight, How to Train Your Dragon 2. Everything that's been said, I echo. Just beautifully animated, and yeah, please, How to Train Your Dragon 2.
Cool. All right.
Well, number eight is another animated movie called Ernest and Celestine. This is a really beautiful movie about a friendship between a bear and a mouse, which is apparently forbidden in this world. I love the way it's animated. It looks like a real storybook. It's kind of a style of anime. It's 2D animation, but it's beautifully like rendered into like the storybook fashion, and the voice work is really charming. It's really just an adorable, beautiful movie. You should definitely check it out.
Okay. Number seven on my best list is Cheap Thrills, with Pat Healy and
Sarah Paxton,
David Koechner, and the other dude,
Ethan Embry.
Right. Yes. This is a really dark, really, really twisted movie that just keeps getting darker and darker and darker
and funnier.
It's hilarious, and it has my favorite final shot of any movie this year. Loved Cheap Thrills.
My number seven is X-Men Days of Future Past. This is my favorite of all the X-Men movies. The first one, I think, that really sort of captures the epic feel of that they've been trying to do for so long. Really expands upon X-Men First Class, I think, in really great ways. I think they have the right version of this cast right now, and I hope that they continue to stick with it because this is my favorite.
That was a terrific movie, yeah. Okay, Colin?
My number seven is a movie called Ida. It's a Polish film about a nun who learns that she actually has a Jewish background, and she goes to explore it.
I wanted to see this. I never
too.
Did.
It's a beautiful film, and one of the main reasons why it's on my list is because it is the most beautifully shot film I've seen this year. Every single frame of this film deserves to be blown up and framed and mounted on a wall. It's just stunning. Ida.
All right, number six has been mentioned already, and it's on my list of the best movies of the year, is Obvious Child, which you already mentioned. I love this movie. I thought it was really charming, and I can't say enough. You've mentioned Jenny Slate. Can't say enough about how great a performance she gives in it. So Obvious Child, number six.
And number six, Cheap Thrills. Everything you said is right there. So Cheap Thrills. People need to discover this film.
Such,
it's great.
It's such a great movie.
It's not on my list, but it is a terrific film. Yeah. I did enjoy it.
Okay.
Number six for me is Under the Skin. The very weird Scarlett Johansson as an alien movie. I think some people have said it's just this generation's 2001. I wouldn't go that far, but it's definitely this generation's Man Who Fell to Earth. It has that strange sort of 70s sensibility to it that I just loved.
Yeah.
So.
All right, cool. All right, number five is Life Itself. This is the documentary that Steve James made about Roger Ebert. It is very entertaining. It's beautifully done. It's hard to watch at times, but it is a perfect tribute to a great guy. And I really thought it was great. So Life Itself is number five.
Okay. Slight caveat here for me. My number five should be The Congress. I reminded you guys about the film, and then I forgot to put it on my list. So my five should be The Congress. Colin mentioned it with Robin Wright, a great science fiction film. So my 5A, if you will, is another great science fiction film, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, that I think... I love what the people at Fox and they're doing with this franchise. Just keeping the intelligence and the special effects work is just top notch. If it doesn't win special effects, then we haven't seen the Oscar winner this year. So, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Okay.
Yeah. My number five is Joe. David Gordon Green's return to form. Nick mentioned it already, and obviously I'm a huge fan of this guy, and just seeing him just do what he does. That he did, in the early days of those first four films. This is definitely up there with them. It's nice to see his trademark sensibilities and his trademark sense of humor, not Danny McBride's trademark sense of humor this time. Mm-hmm. Just a really beautiful atmospheric character study that he just does so well.
All right. Okay, number four on my list is Godzilla. They just announced Godzilla 2, and I'm very excited about it.
Same director?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And he's bringing in Rodan, Mothra, and Ghidra.
Is he losing Aaron Johnson?
Sorry?
Is he losing Aaron Johnson?
I don't know.
Okay.
You know he's married to that...
Yeah, the 50 Shades of Grey.
But she's like 40 years older than him.
Yes.
Very strange.
And he took her name.
I didn't realize that. Until, yeah. Just very strange. Well, anyway, so Godzilla ruled. That's all.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
Four, I see your Godzilla and I raise you a Snowpiercer. Snowpiercer is a year of really great science fiction movies. This is my favorite so far. It's crazy, you know, train around the world during global warming and a mutiny to get from the back of the train to the, you know, the halves at the front of the train. Surprises at every turn. Great action. Terrific climax. Really smart and a lot of fun.
Okay.
Yeah. I keep saying that, sorry. Yeah, because I'm not hearing any movie that I disagreed with, but there's a lot of movies flying around here, which is great. So my number four is The Lego Movie. This is, I mean, it's also a great year for animation. It's definitely making up for last year's lack of animated movies.
Absolutely.
And The Lego Movie is, like, towering over them all for me right now. I've watched it several times as I've had it on Blu-ray, and it just gets funnier and funnier because you just discover more and more gags in it. I mean, it's just jam-packed with so much eye candy and so many gags. It's impossible to keep it up with the first time, so you got to watch it multiple times, and you should. So.
Okay. All right, my number three is was just mentioned, Snowpiercer. This movie kicks ass. I was texting you while I was watching.
Yes, you were.
I was just beside myself. This movie is so good, and I'd like to smack the Weinsteins across the head for giving it such a crappy release. Mm. This movie should be in 50 theaters in this city. You know, like right next to all the other big.
It stars Captain America.
And it stars Captain America and a hilarious Tilda Swinton.
Yes. Yep.
But the action scenes are great. It's beautifully directed. It's very funny. It's incredibly entertaining, and it is moving. This thing, once it starts, it does not stop. So I highly recommend Snowpiercer. It is available on demand, and I think it might still be in a couple of theaters or one theater at least.
Still at the Music Box.
Okay, cool.
Yes.
All right, that's number three for you.
My number three is Darren Aronofsky's Noah. I love what he did, his vision of this movie, vision of the classic Bible story with, you know, all different, you know, source material brought in to create this really remarkable and really, really harrowing story, the way he concocted this thing. I was really sort of put back in my chair with the suspense and the drama of it all. And Russell Crowe's best performance in Cinderella Man. So yeah, Noah is my number three.
Okay. Colin?
My number three is a movie Eric mentioned a little while ago called Blue Ruin. This is a great movie. This is a great revenge movie. And I'm glad, Eric, that you mentioned it's kind of in threes. It is. It's a perfect three-act film. But it's also a great, it's a textbook example of how to do great visual storytelling. If you want to teach film students how to tell a story visually, put on Blue Ruin and turn the sound down, and you'll see, you can follow this along without any sound and know what's going on. That's a great visual storyteller at work there. And, man, the suspense in this movie is fantastic. I just loved it.
Okay,
cool. Blue Ruin.
All right, number two on my list is Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. I loved it. I love these movies, and the special effects are great. The surprising emotion of the ape characters, and Andy Serkis is just, I mean, what can you say? It's a great performance, and I love these movies. So Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Two for me is The Lego Movie. I mean, absolute, pure, unbridled joy at the beginning of February in the movie theaters. I mean, everything Colin said about this movie and you said about it, Nick, it's just so wonderful, so quickly moving, and ends on a note that I didn't think could provoke tears out of me, and it does. It provokes tears and gigantic laughs. It's my favorite animated film in some time, The Lego Movie.
Okay, and Colin?
My number two is Life Itself, the Roger Ebert documentary. You know, it hits a personal chord, and it hits, you know, a chord in other ways, too. This is definitely one you need to check out. It's about a great man who lived a great life. And those are kind of stories that I'm really into nowadays. They're just movies about, you know, that life stories. And this is a great one.
Okay. So. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we will unveil our number one movie of the year for each of us. All right, we want to get this going again. We got one more movie on our best list. Colin and Eric are here, and we're talking about the best movies of 2014 so far. And so we've only got number one left, and then we'll fly down the list of the worst ones. My number one movie is Richard Linklater's Boyhood, which I just think is a remarkable achievement. I loved it. I thought it was great. And as we were talking about it last week, it is sort of the complete summation of Richard Linklater's career. I think it's an extraordinary movie. Roy Leonard says it's the best movie he's seen in 10 years. I think it's a remarkable piece of work. And I know Eric was not a huge fan of it, but I got to say, I think it's the best thing I've seen all year. All right.
My number one is Life Itself. I think there are two really complete movies this year, Lego Movie being one and Life Itself being the other. We know the critic obviously very well. Now we really get to know the man. This is just a remarkable piece of work by Steve James. It's the absolute perfect documentary about the life of Roger Ebert. It's my favorite film of the year.
Okay.
Nick, you're not alone on this one. I went and saw Boyhood again yesterday, it worked even better on me the second time. Mm-hmm. I think it flowed better the second time I saw it. And even the flaws, that I noticed in the first viewing, still kind of there. Not enough to bother me. Not even close enough to bother me, really. I just think it's take away the gimmick. It's still a great film about. It's not a movie about a kid's journey where he starts out as one kind of person, becomes another kind of person. It's about the people in your lives who just are there to kind of kick your butt through life and make sure you're on the right track and make sure you're a good person. That's what this thing is about, among other things. I think it's a movie that's going to get richer and richer with every viewing. I just love it.
Yeah,
so.
Me too. All right, let's do worst, shall we?
Yeah.
All right, I'll just give you my 15, and then you guys can go on yours. Right. Okay. The 15 worst movies so far of 2014. Number 15 is A Haunted House 2. Number 14 is Rio 2. Number 13 is Endless Love. Number 12 is Sex Tape. Number 11 is Mr. Peabody and Sherman. Number 10 is The Amazing Spider-Man 2. Number 9 is And So It Goes. Number 8, Oculus. Number 7, That Awkward Moment. Number 6, Lucy. Number 5, Neighbors. Number 4, I, Frankenstein. Number 3, Tammy. Number 2, A Million Ways to Die in the West. And number 1, Transformers Age of Extinction.
Wow, so many I haven't seen. I got some good ones. Number 15, Pompeii. Yeah. 14, Oculus. 13, The Signal. Not the good Signal from a few years ago, but the Signal from this year. 12, The Bagman with Cusack and De Niro.
Man.
Yeah. 11, Raise. 10, Ping Pong Summer. 9, The Other Woman. 8, The Amazing Spider-Man 2. 7, Divergent. 6, About Last Night, the remake. 5, Think Like a Man 2 to double up on the Kevin Hart. 4, Tammy. 3, Endless Love. 2, Vampire Academy. And number 1 with a bullet, God's Not Dead.
All right. My number 15, Words and Pictures. Number 14, Earth to Echo. Number 13, Heaven is for Real. Number 12, Transformers 4. Number 11, Amazing Spider-Man 2. Number 10, The Other Woman. 9, Fading Gigolo. Number 8, About Last Night. Number 7, Need for Speed. Number 6, Vampire Academy. Number 5, The Angriest Man in Brooklyn. Number 4, Endless Love. Number 3, I, Frankenstein. Number 2, Rennie Harlan's Legend of Hercules. And number 1, Blended.
Yes. You were the only one who...
I took that bullet.
Yes, you did.
Thank you, America, for not making that a hit. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, so there you go. That's it for this half, the first half, and we'll do it again in like 6 months.
Five months.
Yeah. And so there you go. You guys, thanks for coming down. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
And so that's it. That's the best and the worst of 2014 so far.